சூத்ரபாஷ்யக்ருதௌ வந்தே பகவந்தௌ புனஃப் புனஃ ஈஶ்வரோ குருராத்மேதி மூர்த்திபேத விபாகினே வ்யோமவத்வ்யாப்த தேஹாய தக்ஷிணாமூர்த்தயே நமஹ. குகாரஸ்த்வந்தகாரோ வை ருகாரஸ்தன்நிவர்த்தகஃ அந்தகார நிரோதித்வாத் குருரித்யபிதீயதே. ஓம் சஹனாவவது, சஹனௌ புனக்து, சஹ வீர்யங்கரவாவஹை, தேஜஸ்வினாவதீதமஸ்து மா வித்விஷாவஹை. ஓம் சாந்தி சாந்தி சாந்திஹி. We will start from chanting the 15th chapter from verse 16 onwards. You can do that together. Dvavimau purushau loke ksharascha kshara eva cha ksharas sarvani bhutani kotastho kshara uchyate uttamah purushasvanyah பரமாத்மேத்யுதாக்ருதஹ யோ லோகத்ரயமாவிஷ்ய விபர்த்யவ்யய ஈஸ்வரஹ யஸ்மாத் க்ஷரமதீதோஹம் அக்ஷராதபி சோத்தமஹ அதோஸ்மி லோகே வேதே ச ப்ரதிதஃ புருஷோத்தமஹ. அப் டில் ஹியர் வி ஹவ் டன் ஐ திங்க். நெக்ஸ்ட் ஒன். யோ மாமேவமசம்மூடஹ ஜானாதி புருஷோத்தமம் சர்வவித் பஜதி மாம் சர்வபாவேன பாரத. க்ஷர புருஷா, அக்ஷர புருஷா அண்ட் உத்தம புருஷா. It's not that there are three Purushas, that one Purusha alone is seen from the standpoint of the effect, karyatmaka Purusha. Effect means what? This whole Jagat is the product of Bhagavan, and in an as though product, but it is non separate from Bhagavan. It is a product, karya, and then every karya has a karana. Karana means cause. So that cause, seen from the standpoint of the cause, it is also Bhagavan alone. So there is only one Purusha. We must not get confused thinking that there are three Purushas and will the real Purusha please stand up. No. You know, there is only one Purusha, and that same Purusha. And how do we know there is only one Purusha? In another prayer, the Vedic prayer called Purusha Sukta, Purusha Evedagam Sarvam. All this here is Purusha alone. And that Purusha has got 1,000 hands or 1,000 heads, means countless ways of manifesting in this universe. So it's not that there are so many Purushas and I'm getting confused how to recognize the correct Purusha. There is only one Purusha. And that same Purusha is seen from the standpoint of the manifest Jagat. We don't use the word creation, because the creation implies a certain remoteness. Like even the creation of something like a pot. When the pot is created, the potter does not come along with the pot, right? You go buy the pot, the potter is somewhere sitting at home with his or her family. So there is a certain remoteness when we use the word creation. And also in relation to this whole, especially if you look at other theologies, The creation always implies a duality. This author of the universe, sitting elsewhere, has made this Jagat in a place called heaven. And don't ask who made heaven and all, those questions are not allowed. So therefore here, that is not the vision, that is not the Vedic vision at all. The Vedic vision is that all that is here, the so-called effect, is not separate from the cause. Just like our trusty pot clay example. If we ask, where exactly is the clay, you know, in relation to the pot? You cannot say it's on top of the pot. You cannot say it's underneath the pot. You cannot say it's in between the pot and, you know, non-pot. No. In fact, there is no such thing as pot. All there is clay. It's clay, clay, clay alone. Manifest as a pot. Manifest as yet another pot. Manifest as a lid. Manifest as a figurine of Bhagavan Krishna perhaps. So, it is the same clay that is manifest in many forms without any loss. And so really speaking, we can get caught up in the size of the pot, in how much water it holds. We can get caught up in so many things. We can measure the pot. We can look at the glaze if there is any on the pot. We can look at how much water it holds. We can look at how it relates to other pots. But really speaking, if we do a PhD thesis on the pot, then what do we know? A lot of nothing. Because really speaking, we cannot reckon the pot without simultaneously accounting for the source. That source of the pot is alone clay, and if we know the clay, then the whole pot world is as though cognized. So says the Chandogya Upanishad. In the beginning, it says that. Ekena mritpindena sarvam mrinmayam vijnatam iva bhavati. That's what it is. You know the clay, you know everything in the whole earthenware world. And so when we use the term Kshara Purusha, it is Bhagavan manifest in terms of our example, in the form of the pot. That is what we say, Kshara Purusha. This is just an example. So Bhagavan manifest as the so-called effect, manifest as various laws and orders in this Jagat, starting with the five elements. That manifestation is sacred. That manifestation is not outside of that which is limitless. How can something be outside of limitless? If it is outside of limitless, then limitless is no longer limitless, correct? Limitless becomes limited. So nothing is outside of the limitless. So the effect resolves into the cause. And the effect itself being an as though, it is just the cause plus name and form. That is what the effect is. The effect is not something separate. It is that same tattva, that truth, that purusha, plus a name and form. The name and form can be lost, it comes and goes. What remains is purusha alone. So that is what is called Kshara Purusha effect. From the standpoint of the effect, it is called Kshara Purusha. That is what the same purusha. Then you can view the same purusha from the standpoint of the cause. And that is what that cause is unchanging. Because we cannot have a changing cause all the time. It's a changeless cause. It's that which is a manifesting cause, which manifests as the effect. The cause, in order to manifest as the effect, denotes a certain power. And that power is called Shakti in Sanskrit. Maya Shakti. Endowed with this power, this cause, as it were, you know, gains the ability to be called Jagat, gains a title. Jagat Karanam Brahma Ishvara, like that. So that manifesting potential, that Shakti here is called Akshara Purusha. Usually, and this can be a little confusing, so we have to look at it a little, you know, vistarena, in detail. Because usually the word akshara is used for Brahman, is used for Ishvara. But here, it is used for that status, that potential, which makes this Brahman gain the status of being a cause. It endows this non-acting, non-interfering Brahman, which is the truth of everything. It endows this Brahman with the ability to act, the ability to as though create, the ability to manifest this whole thing. Plus at the same time, not content with just manifesting the whole thing, it causes also as it were a smoke screen, so that the truth is hidden from oneself. And that is what the next verse is going to talk about. So really speaking, so the manifesting potential here is called Akshara Purusha, the Shakti, the goddess, the power to create, because the power is always feminine. The power to create is always coded in the Upanishad as a feminine potential. So that here is called Akshara Purusha. And then if we had a dualistic theology, what is dualistic? Dualistic, you're fighting all the time. You're fighting all kinds of duels, that is what it is. So if you have a dualistic philosophy, Dvaita, then the cause and the effect are two separate things. When the cause and the effect are there, and the effect is as real as the cause, and this is what we have, two manifestations. But here, there is no such thing as the effect. The effect is the pot. What pot? You know, pot is not really pot. Pot is just a name and form, word and meaning given to clay. That is really what it is. It does not have a standing of its own. Because if it did, then you can just say, I'll have the pot, but I don't want the clay. You can't do that. So wherever pot goes, clay comes. So the cause inheres, as it were, the effect. And so here, the cause and the effect, we have to understand this, and this is what the 15th chapter is famous for, driving home the understanding that the effect, while it is non-separate from the cause, we cannot say the same thing the other way around. We cannot say the cause is non-separate from the effect. Then we have a kind of an infinite regression. The cause is the cause. The effect resolves into the cause. And that cause also, as we are finding out in this chapter, is not the ultimate. Because when you say cause, it's a relational status, is it not? Yeah. Cause is always a relational status in relation to what? Effect. You cannot say this is the cause of what? No, nothing, but it's still called the cause. If it is not the cause of anything, then it is not called cause. It may be called because. But it's not called the cause. So the cause always is a relational status. A relational status means it has a certain kind of a relationship with the effect. And what is the relationship between the cause and the effect, as shown in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? The same relationship that the rope and the snake have to each other. Which snake? Rope snake. The rope that is confused for a snake, you know, and the rope itself, they are not going to go out for coffee together, correct? They are not going to say, let's go to Starbucks and enjoy a cup of coffee. That just doesn't happen. Why? Because really speaking, there is only one thing. What is that?
Rope, yeah. Don't say snake. Yeah.
You have to be alert, you know. Yeah. So, all there is the rope. And so here too, the cause and the effect is non-separate from the cause, resolves into the cause. The cause, because of its causality, is given the name of cause. The cause also really here, Maya Shakti, also has a kind of a boss here, a cause. So that is what is called Uttama Purusha. The ultimate. And who is this? Even superior to Akshara Purusha, who is this final Purusha? The final Purusha is where all the buck stops, everything stops here. There is nothing more to talk about. Because it's really the same Purusha that is seen not from the standpoint of cause or effect, but from the vision of what it is, that limitless whole which at once obtains as the truth of I, which is the meaning of the word I, Purusha. And therefore what? It is free of causality, it is free of being effect. Because the effect and the cause are as though statuses given. But really speaking, that which is the Atma Tattva, the truth of oneself, is neither the cause nor the effect. How can it be neither the cause nor the effect? Because it is able to manifest as the cause and the effect without being either cause or effect. Therefore, it is neither cause nor effect. Because it is limitless. If you say it is the cause, it is limited by not being the effect, correct? There is a certain limitation. And if you say Purusha is only the effect, then also it is limited because it is not the cause. Then why not say Purusha is both cause and effect? We are saying that. But that also, if the cause and effect are both real, then we are in a soup. Because again we go to some kind of a dualism here. So both the causality is a imposition, so to speak, on that Purusha. It's a status, and the effect is also a certain kind of an imposition on that Purusha. Just like that, with that same rope, you know, you can see snake sometimes, you can see something else, you can see, you know, a bigger snake, you can see all kinds of varieties of snakes on that same rope. So that is why the rope snake example has a mainstay in the Shastra, in the teaching. Because this word that we use for the imposition, a kind of a superimposition on that truth, on that only reality, which is in itself whole and limitless. So the word for that is called Aropaha. Maybe the word rope came from Aropaha. So, this is basically the whole kind of the division. So, seen from the standpoint of the effect, the Purusha gains one name. Seen from the standpoint of the cause, the Purusha gains one more name. Kshara and Akshara respectively. And then finally what? That which is the real Purusha is what? Free from having a superimposed causality on itself, or even the so-called effect. The cause-effect duality is also ultimately given up. So these two standpoints resolve into the view that this Purusha is the absolute, the ultimate and the whole, which obtains as oneself alone. This is what the Shastra has taught. This is just a summary. You have already, you know, understood this. And this is just a summary. And so here, we have this very, this beautiful word. This Purusha itself is a wonderful word. It has several derivations. And the first derivation is just this person sitting inside this citadel. Purav Ushati Purishayanam. This Pur means this citadel, like a fortress. And this conscious being locked inside this fortress. What kind of fortress? This body, mind, sense complex. Navadvare Pure Dehi, the Bhagavad Gita says. A fortress that has 9 portholes from which the Jagat can enter and in which one feels bound, trapped, limited and small. That is the first derivation. And then the final, ultimate derivation is Sarvan Purayati Iti Purushaha. That which fills up everything, which does not leave anything, just like even flowing water fills up all the holes and does not, you know, discriminate. It just keeps flowing and flowing, filling up everything. So that which accommodates everything is also called Purushaha. So basically the journey of the 15th chapter is the journey from the first Purusha, the one who feels helpless, hopeless and desperate, to the second Purusha, the one who grows into accommodating, grows in knowledge to accommodate everything within oneself. This is the human journey. And that's why this chapter is extremely important, because out of all the Bhagavad Gita chapters, it is considered the most complete. It is really considered the most complete. And so, we will see the reasons why a little later, but now we can focus on verse number 19. Yaha mam evam janati. The one who knows me in this manner. Which manner? The one that we just talked about. In this manner, as neither the cause nor the effect, but the latent truth of oneself, as that which manifests as the cause, as the effect, but which is free of causality, free of being an effect. That into which everything resolves and itself is free of any kind of a status. That is how I am to be known, says Lord Krishna, Bhagavan Krishna, in this chapter. That is how you have to know me, as non-separate from yourself. As that which transcends the cause as well as the effect. This is how I have to be known. And yaha, the one who, evam mam abhijanati, the one who knows me completely just like this. And who is that person? Asam moodha. Moodha, from muh, to delude. Moodha, the one who is deluded. When? All the time. Yeah. You cannot be kabhi kabhi deluded, correct? Yeah, you can be deluded or not deluded. Kabhi kabhi means sometimes you cannot be deluded. You're deluded all the time. One is deluded or one is not free from delusion. If one is not free from delusion, what is the only other option? One is deluded. Moodha, the one who is deluded. And the prefix sam always means well done, sushtu kritam, and that's why we have, the word sam has an auspicious prefix, which means extremely well done,
like Kritam and Samskritam, right? So here it's not just a deluded person, but the one who is extremely well deluded. How to be nicely deluded? Are there gradations in the extent of one's delusion? That's not the idea. It's not little bit, you know, it's not, you don't have varieties of delusions, you know. But here, Bhagavan is just underscoring the idea, the fact that delusion means it is, well, the person is totally deluded. It's not well deluded, as in the vegetables are well done, no. But here, some has the meaning of asamantat, completely, totally deluded. And that is negated by a, asammoodha. A is a negative particle, correct? For words that begin with the consonants. Otherwise, an is the negative particle for words that begin with vowels in Sanskrit. Now, unlike, you know, it's not unlike English. See, I already used a word that begins with an, unlike, unkind, correct? Like that. So here, asammoodha, the one who is totally free of all delusions. How to be free of all delusions? By knowing the all. How to know everything in the universe? There are so many things. If I ask that question, that means I am caught up with, you know, Ksharapurusha, the effect. The effect, of course, is endlessly manifest and universal. Then how to know that, you know, the who is the cause? If I am caught up with just the cause, the status of the cause, then I am caught up with what is called the Shakti behind it all, Akshara Purusha. But here I have to know that truth which manifests as both without being either. Just like gold manifests as chain and earring and bangle without being either bangle, chain or earring. The gold is just gold. So in this manner, whoever knows me, me here is not, you know, we have to remember wherever Bhagavan says maam, me, mama, you know, mamai vam sho jiva loke, like that, when he uses this personal pronoun of I, me, mine, etc., we have to remember that it is not an individual who is speaking. And it is not the individual in the form of Mr. Krishna or somebody who is very well qualified like Dr. Krishna, PhD. No. This is why it is called Bhagavan Uvacha. It is not from the point of view of an expert talking about this, but it is the one who is the giver of the vision manifest here as the teacher, as non-separate from what is being taught. And this is the beauty of learning it in this way, asammoodhatvena, because as the Upanishads promise, Brahmavit Brahmaiva Bhavati. This is the only field of knowledge where one, you know, is able to quote unquote become that knowledge. We have to use heavy quotes when we say become. There is really no becoming. We consider becoming very unbecoming. So we have to see that this whole thing is that I have to understand this truth of myself in clearly, without delusion, without any form of confusion. And that knowledge has to be free from doubt, vagueness, error, and other internal or external contradictions in my own field of knowledge and experience. That is basically what is being talked about here. And that is basically what is asammoodhatvena vijnaya, knowing me in this manner, Bhagavan says. I am that Atma Tattva, I am the truth of you, and I am speaking as the truth of you. And knowing me in this manner, what happens? Why should I know Bhagavan in this manner? சர்வவித் பஜதி, பஜதி மாம், மாம் பஜதி. பஜ, இட் டசன்ட் மீன் சேவாயாம் ஹியர் இன் த சென்ஸ் ஆஃப் வர்ஷிப். பஜ ஹியர் மீன்ஸ் லபதே, கெயின்ஸ் மீ. Gains me as what? As yourself, as the truth of oneself. The one who is no longer deluded has a beautiful, you know, epithet here given by Bhagavan. Sarvavit, an all-knowing person. An all-knowing person free of any kind of notion of finitude. With regard to the body, the mind, the senses, with regard to what one has, what one doesn't have, because these are all coming under the category of kshara purushattvam. These are all coming under the category of the destructible, because anything that is put together is going to fall apart. We know that. So, the one who is able to recognize me as the truth of this very body-mind-sense complex, as that limitless Bhagavan residing as it were in a broken-down body-mind-sense complex. If not broken down, rapidly breaking down. This is what it is. Kshara means it is subject to breaking down. Just because the body is breaking down, that doesn't mean I have to have a breakdown, correct? This is the whole asambuddha knowledge, that the I, even though the body, mind, sense complex is sacred because it is a gift given by Bhagavan, it's created by Bhagavan, it is not any less than Bhagavan, it's a manifestation of Bhagavan. But what? Bhagavan is not this body. This is the key to understanding this particular chapter. Bhagavan transcends this body-mind-sense complex, but at the same time, there is no part of this body that is not inhabited by Bhagavan, not blessed by Bhagavan. When the ears hear, it's not the ears that hear, it's not the eyes that see, you know. Why? Because it's the eye of the eye. The ear of the ear. Because if the eyes see, then why not the person who is, you know, departed? Why not the dead person's eyes? Why don't they see? Because there is something that has departed from there. That is what. And that presence of Bhagavan alone makes me see, makes me hear, makes me have a, you know, connection to everything that there is. So the body is non-separate from Bhagavan. Bhagavan is not just the body, because otherwise Bhagavan becomes limited. So the body will have its own law, and that law to which the body is subject is also Bhagavan. This is what is called, in the same standpoint we see everything. Adi daivikam. Adi daivikam means that law which makes sure that the body keeps on aging, 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 aging. This is the law. This is also Bhagavan. And the individual body with its own complexes, that is also Bhagavan. And the body that is a manifestation of the five elements, Adi Bhautikam, that is also seen from that point, also it is Bhagavan. So even at the individual level, we have these ways of looking at this body, mind, sense complex. So the one who obtains as the truth of me, and here the me doesn't mean as good as the body, as good as the mind, the one who transcends that. You know, when I say, are you here? What will you say? Nothing, right? Are you here? Yes, yeah. Feebly and little late, at least the answer came. You have to say yes. You can't say no. Unless one is asleep, you know, for which Vedanta classes are famous. But Are you here? You have to say yes.
What is it that makes you say yes?
That presence alone is what is called Purusha here. Which Purusha? Uttama Purusha. And interestingly, a grammatical note in Sanskrit, I'm not going to bore you with, don't want to make you run away by talking Sanskrit rules, but this is just a lot of fun. You'll enjoy this. In the Sanskrit verbal declensions, we have the same word Uttama Purusha to refer to the first person. How cool is that? How wonderful that is. Yeah. So we don't have first person, you know, second person, third person. In fact, for us, the third person is what is called first person. Prathama Purusha is the he, she, it, they. All the things that are worth talking about, the topic, the jagat is called the first person because that is what is immediately available to talk about. And Madhyama Purusha is the person to which, to whom you are talking about the jagat because you need somebody else to discuss the jagat. Correct? How horrible it is, what is happening, the prices are going up, this is not, I am not having a good time. Even after 15 chapters of Gita, knowledge is eluding me. These are all things that you need somebody else to talk with. And that person is called Madhyama Purusha. The one who stands between you and the Jagat. So you can vent about the Jagat to this person. This is called the second person. And finally what? Uttama Purusha. That is I. So many he, she, it grammatically, think about it. He, she, it. They. And then you can also say so many you. So many yous are there. And having lived in the south of the United States for some time, I was introduced to a new word, not in the dictionary. What is that? Y'all. So you can say y'all, that means what? There are many, many yous. But then when it comes to I, how many I's are there? One I. Even grammatically, there's only one. Very beautiful. There's just one. And so the one who knows this knows as it were everything. Sarvavit Bhajati gains me as the truth of oneself, and that truth being everything, gains everything. We have to take it in the general sense. Because there are two words that are used to describe Ishvara, Bhagavan. One of them is Sarvajnaha, and the other one is Sarvavit. And both these are used, you know, synonymously, except when they appear together, as in a verse from the Mundaka Upanishad. Yas sarvajnah sarvavit yasyaiva mahima bhuvi. So here there are the word sarvajna, which means all knowing, and the word sarvavit, which also means what? All knowing. Sarvam vetti iti sarvam sarvavit, sarvam janati iti sarvajnah. It is the same, you know, meaning, different root verbs are used. So both mean all-knowing. But because they are used together, and because the Veda does not have the punarukti dosha, the fallacy of redundancy, we have to see what is the meaning conveyed when the two words are used together. Sarvajnaha, the one who knows everything in general. What is this in general? Like for example, do you know what you know? Yes, I know what I know. Do you know that all the things you don't know? What do you mean, do I know all the things I don't know? What a question that is. I have to say yes though, correct? Because I know there are many things I don't know, right? So then, what is the definition of the word all? Sarvam. Sarvam constitutes what I know plus what I don't know, correct? What a lovely definition. So if I know what I know, And if I know what I also don't know, that means I am all knowing, sarvajnaha. Very nice. It boosts confidence. So such words we need. We need to have these words to make us feel good as one is imbibing this knowledge. Then sarvavit is also talking here when it is used simultaneously with sarvajna. It is talking about a specific kind of knowledge. And what is that specific kind of knowledge? That specific knowledge here is knowledge of language, knowledge of all disciplines, all fields, etc. Specific things that one becomes all-knowing in the sense of that is an epithet that can be only applied to Bhagavan, not to the human being even after gaining this knowledge. Sarvavit means what? The one who knows all languages. How to know all languages, you know? There is an expression, this is Greek to me, right? Meaning we don't know Greek. Then once I met a person from Greece, I said, we all say this is Greek to us. What do you say? And the Greek person said, we say it is Chinese to me. So in Greece they say, it is Chinese to me. Here we say it is Greek to me. Meaning, I don't know so many things. And is that going to change after awakening to the truth of myself? Aham Brahmasmi, I am this Brahman. Okay, finished. Then what? Then suddenly I start composing verses in both Greek and Chinese. Does that happen? No. It need not happen. Because that which is the truth of Greek, the truth of Chinese, the truth of Icelandic, any language, Cherokee language, Native American languages, any language, is really that which is oneself alone. So, as long as this person, this jnani, who has gained this knowledge, is as long as they are occupying this body-mind-sense complex, the mind being limited, the mind itself is a limited upadhi, as it were. Upadhi means a manifestation. The mind itself is a limited upadhi. So therefore what? The knowledge will also always be also limited that which is held in the mind. Usually with regard to the mind, what do we have to say? Never mind. Because half the things we don't remember, especially when we want to remember. Correct? Yeah. So therefore, for all knowledge of specific things, people's karmas intersecting one another, new languages, new kinds of jivas coming, all these specific knowledges has to be, you know, has to be held in the form of that which has no containment or container. Since Ishvara doesn't have a mind, therefore this holding of this knowledge, holding again is within quotes, is possible. Carrying this knowledge is possible because it is a vast, limitless knowing. And Ishvara, as a knowing being, is knowing everything without needing a karana, an instrument of knowing. But for the jiva, this instrument of knowing is needed because we need this mind. Even for Vedanta, we need the mind, even though the knowledge does not happen by the mind, it happens in the mind. So the mind is needed very much. And so therefore what? Therefore we say that this sarvavit is the name for Bhagavan who has all knowledge of the specific things. And sarvajna is the name for Bhagavan in terms of the one who knows Satyam and Mithya together, which is what? Only Satyam. And so that's a general term. And then after gaining this knowledge, one can call oneself a sarvajna, knows everything in general because knows that one thing which is the source of everything. If you know gold, you can say, I know all the ornaments as well. So in that sense, generally you can say that. But here, the word sarvavit is used for the individual. So therefore, we have to take the word sarvavit more in the sense of sarvajna. Okay? In the form of the general knowing. It's not that suddenly the person will start composing verses in all kinds of languages. It is not necessary. It's a kind of a posturing. And sometimes I meet these new age people. You know, they also somehow they, have some sense of this oneness without the teaching, the authentic teaching that we deliver here. Without the recourse to the knowledge, without recourse to the lineage, this sudden feeling of oneness, which everybody has through some, which is through certain experiences where the wanting person resolves. You know, what some people start to say is that, oh, I'll become free of limitations. I can fly. I can do this. I can do that. That is not necessary. Yeah, what the body can do, the body can do. It doesn't matter. Because I'm not the sum total of this body, mind, sense complex anyway. And so, how do I understand it? Not by having an out-of-body experience. If I'm supposed to have an out-of-body experience, why do I have the body? You know? So, therefore what? Within, even being within this body, I am able to, say that I am not just this body, mind, sense. I'm free enough to have a limping body, free enough to have a limited body. So this person of knowledge doesn't have to be free of physical problems. That's not the idea. Because somebody asked me this at a satsang. If I study Vedanta, will all my problems go away? That was the question. It's a famous question. I'm sure many people have that, especially in the beginning. And what is the answer to that? I said, no, but you will be free enough to also have the neighbor's problems and not be affected by that. That is the understanding. And so, sa sarvavit bhajati labhate mam, gains me as the truth of oneself, gains me alone. And how does this person gain me? What is the meaning of this gain? How does this so-called gain happen? The gain is in the form of knowing that everything that is manifest here is non-separate from myself. Sarva bhavena bhajate mam. In the form of all that is there. Sarva bhava here is sarvatma bhava. Sarvatma. Meaning the truth, the self. Myself is the self in all. In that sense, the person gains me. So the person knows me as the truth of the Kshara Purusha, everything that is so-called destructible, finite, time-bound, all the manifestations are Bhagavan alone. That is why we don't destroy even a small ant. We escort it out. Yeah. We don't destroy it. And, so sarva bhavena, in the form of all the things that are here, in the form of everything that is finite, is also really blessed by that which is limitless and infinite. And the cause also is an as though cause in relation to the effect. And what am I? Neither cause nor the effect. Yeah. The truth of that which informs the cause and the truth of that without which the effect cannot be. So there is one common thing which is between the cause and the effect. What is that? That presence which makes me say I am, for which there is no doubt. That presence is alone the common thing between the cause and the effect. The cause is just a little trapping. It's like wearing the dress of a king. You know, this Maya Shakti is a great seamstress. She has her own fashion design, fashion line. And what does she do? She stitches a grand robe trimmed with sequins and galaxies and planets and very grand robe, donning which the same Purusha is called Ishvara, the cause. And then she also stitches some tattered robes, a cloak, with cutouts, And then the same Purusha, as it were wearing that, is called what? Agnani Jiva. That is what it is. The robe comes and goes, correct?
Yeah.
Robe is just a status. The robe is not the person. The person wearing both the robes is really one and the same. It's just like a Halloween party. That's all it is. So the knowledge that when I call the bluff of this Maya, when I know that this is just a dress, Ishwaral is the word Ishwara is a dress that Brahman is wearing. A dress of all might, all knowledge, all power, with the scepter and what all, crown, everything. And what? The tattered, hapless, hopeless, helpless dress of the Jiva, cloaked in ignorance, is also a dress. So really speaking, there is no Jiva and Ishwara. There is really, you know, Jiva, the state of being Jiva is what is called Mithya. It's a dependent reality, dependent on that ultimate Uttama Purusha. The status of being Ishwara is also dependent upon that Uttama Purusha, which is free of being a Jiva, which is free of, you know, being the cause. This is how the person knows. So the person is free. Sarvavit. She becomes a sarvavit, one who is all knowing in the sense of generally speaking, knows the truth of the universe. So all means what? Really there is only one thing. Like the knower of the gold knows the whole world, golden world. So similarly, the knower of Brahman knows the whole jagat, which is nothing but sarvam brahmamayam. It is just a manifestation. And then what? Bhajati sarva bharena bhavena bharata. Bharata is address. From the word, you know, it is a muni, an ancient sage, which we are all the descendants of, you know, Bharata. But here Bharata is the one, it comes from the word to fill up completely. Even in Hindi we say bharna, to fill up. So here, some of the words used by Bhagavan Krishna to address Arjuna, there are many, and it's not just because they fit into the meter they are used. There is very, very deep meaning. Sometimes when Arjuna is crying and says, I don't want to fight, I don't want to do this, so many things are happening, why me, I'm feeling sad. He is addressed by Bhagavan as Kaunteya, Mama's boy, you know, let go of the, you know, Kunti Putra. Don't be a Mama's boy, let go of these apron strings, grow up, mature. And sometimes if he is keeping on asking how to get over karma, how to overcome all these things, he is addressed as Anagha. The one who has no papa punya, the one who is free totally of omissions and commissions, guilt and hurt. That is the truth of oneself. And then here he is addressed as Bharata, the one who is complete. There is nothing more to, you know, complete here. And this is very beautiful. And sarva bhavena Bharata. And sarvavit bhajati mam sarva bhavena bharata. So that is, you know, that is the second last verse. And usually we spend some time, you know, what's the word for it, recapitulating the entire chapter, so that we, before we move to the next one, we get some kind of an idea of how to, what went before. But we are very fortunate here, because Bhagavan himself does this in the last chapter. He summarizes the whole verse for us, and we will look at that verse in detail. Iti guhyatamam shastram. You've had breakfast, right? Yeah. So let me hear it in your voice, please. Iti guhyatamam shastram. That's more like it. Idamuktam mayanagha. Etad buddhva buddhiman syat. Etad कृतकृत्यश्च भारत. इति इन दिस मैनर गुह्यतमं शास्त्रम. शास्त्र मीन्स टीचिंग, derived from the root verb shas, to teach. Shasanat trayate, that which protects through the teaching itself is called shastra. So this shastra, this teaching, so the word shastra is used for not just one Upanishad but for the entire body of teaching. So this guhya tamam, guhyam from guh, to hide. And then the suffix is something called tamap, which means the superlative. So like we have good, better, best, like that. So guhyatamam, the most closely guarded secret, the most secretive. So we can say in a gradation of that which is secretive, little more secretive, the ultimate secret. Guhyatamam shastram. In this manner, the most closely guarded and the most ultimate secret, uktam, has been taught. Uktam actually means from vach to speak. No, but not here, it's not just spoken. It has been taught in detail. We have to understand it in this manner. By whom? Maya. By me. Who is this me? Bhagavan. By Ishvara. The one who is the truth of myself. And in the form of the teacher, it has been taught. See, that word has come. Anagha. Oh, the one who is without any sin, any omissions and commissions. I don't like to use the word sin because that itself, translating the word papa and agha as sin, is itself the only sin, really, because it doesn't have that connotation. Because we have all these theological stances that say that the person is born in sin. This is what is called original sin. Because you have parents and there is this parampara, and this parampara of original sin. This is something which is not signified by the word papa. Papa here means that the actions that are done by a person in the here or in the previous lives have consequences. This is just a law. But all actions have consequences. Actions in keeping with the cosmic flow of what we call dharma have good consequences that lead to the comfortable situations, enjoying comfortable situations in the here or the hereafter. Because we don't know when it's going to fructify, right? One good turn deserves another, but when that turn is going to come, you don't know. And this is what is called punya. Papa is the consequences of actions that are committed against the cosmic flow, against the cosmic law of what is correct, what is appropriate, what is one's duty to do. When one goes against this cosmic flow, one incurs consequences that translate into difficult or uncomfortable situations again in the here or the hereafter. And we are very familiar with this. Morning is okay, afternoon, you know, a personal rain cloud forms, where? Right on top of the head. Nobody knows why. You know, morning headache, evening backache, you know, all this. Why are you only focusing on the bad things? Because the good things, when we come, we take it for granted. Because there is a sense of entitlement, we don't notice it. We are only lulled out of our complacency when the difficulties come. That is when Bhagavan, you know, is in popular demand. Where are you? How are you allowing this? What did I do? This is what happens.
So therefore, this is what is called papa punya. It has nothing to do with sin or being sinful just because one is born. So here, Arjuna is addressed as the one who is free of papa and punya. In other words, free of karma, karmic retributions of any kind. Free of karma. Anagha. Agha means papa. Anagha means free of any kind of omissions and commissions, because the omissions and commissions and belong to the person who is having the sense of doership, who is obsessed with the sense of doership. So the one who wakes up to this knowledge, to see that I am not the doer, that Purusha is the doer, I am not the doer, that's at least one level we can, you know, assimilate. For that person, you know, when you wake up into this understanding, I am not the doer, all the things that are so-called done have no bearing. Yeah. So the karma, basically, the papa punya is a model so that one learns to steer. They are like the training wheels on a bike, on a child's bicycle. So that one learns to steer through this road of dharma without going astray. And when one knows one has accomplished dharma, then papa punya what? Have no reason. It's like a dharma. The karma model becomes a crutch which has no purpose after one learns to walk. It's just a crutch. So that one learns to navigate through this road of life properly. But the truth of everybody, even the truth of somebody who is given to serial killing, is really anagha, without any papa punya. Because the atma of that person given to crime and the atma of someone who is a pandit is one and the same. It's really one and the same. But you cannot tell the person who is imprisoned for, you know, saying you are not the doer. Because that person will get encouraged, because they don't have the basic thing even to understand this. So this is just a very high understanding to see that I am not riddled by guilt and hurt, by omissions and commissions. I am anagha, incapable. Because whatever happens, whatever I do is incapable of tarnishing that I, that self, which is Uttama Purusha. Then what? Etat buddhva. Buddhva, buddh to know, buddhva, having known, etat, this what? Guhyatamam shastram, the most secretive knowledge, body of knowledge. Buddhiman syat, two things happen as a result of this knowledge. Oh goody, now we are come to what is called phalashruti. What happens? I want to know. Because otherwise, why to pursue this knowledge, right? Why to waste time pursuing this knowledge? So two things are promised in this verse. One is the person becomes buddhiman. Buddhi means intellect. The suffix matup, which translates into man, means the one who is possessed with an intellect. So what, until this knowledge came, the one was free of the intellect? No, that is not the idea. Buddhiman here means the one who has the epithet of being able to use the intellect. What is the use of having the intellect and dusting it and putting in the showcase? That's not the point of having the intellect. Intellect means how to use it. So buddhiman means the one who uses the intellect. The human being who uses the intellect for the only purpose for which it is made. And what is the intellect made for? The intellect is not made for finding out, you know, hatching a plan how to rob a bank. That is not what the intellect is made for. Neither the intellect is made for thinking how to get ahead at the cost of other people. That's not the intellect. The intellect which is given to the human being, you know, is
is for pursuing this knowledge alone, because in no other life form we can have this kind of knowledge. So dogs, cats, any, you know, donkeys, buffaloes, they are okay as they are. They neither have a complex centered on themselves, nor do they need to remove the complex. They have freedom, you know, of action, yes. The donkey can kick, may not kick, but the donkey doesn't have freedom over action. It won't stop from kicking just because a Swami happens to be standing behind it, correct? Yeah. It's not saying, oh, okay, I should not kick now. It will kick. So, therefore, we have to see this, that the human life is a great gift. It's a present handed to us on this platter to fulfill that glaring desire. And what is that glaring desire? To know oneself. No, but I don't have the desire to know myself. I want to go to the movies and the mall. Well, really speaking, that inside those other desires is really this desire alone. So that the glaring desire is to remove the sense of unfulfillment from the heart. Because if you look at any pursuit or activity that you are doing, it is to gain a sense of accomplishment and fulfillment. And all accomplishments are what? Finite. And so, therefore, we have to see perhaps the truth of the one who is accomplishing. The accomplisher is infinite. And so knowing this infinite alone, knowing this limitless as myself, as free from papa punya, as free from everything, then only I become, you know, redeemed truly. Then only I have used the intellect. The reason for the human birth has been fulfilled. And so that is the person who is called Buddhiman, who has all kinds of viveka. Atma viveka, anatma viveka, nitya viveka. Viveka means discrimination. The ability to discern between what is it that I want. That which is a sense of permanence. Which is that permanence alone I want. Not impermanence. I have to understand that. And so, therefore that person becomes Buddhiman. Person becomes someone who is fit to be called a human being. And then what? The next one is even wonderful. Kritaha kritakrityaha. Kritam krityam sarvam kritam yena. By whom everything that needs to be accomplished has already been accomplished. How can we say that? Just like when you know gold, you know all the ornaments. Similarly, everything that is accomplished, needs to be accomplished, is accomplished by one stroke alone. No more what? No more lists of any kind. You know, in America we make lot of lists. Then you have to make a list to remember all the lists you made, because the lists are so many. Even standing in a place of worship, you know, you go to the temple and all the lists come flowing out of the mind. I want this, Bhagavan, I want that, give me this, keep them safe and do this and do that, let them be okay. So many things, we don't even know what to ask for first. And then to top it all, even in the deathbed there is a list. What is that list called? Bucket list. Ah, before you kick the bucket, you make a big list. So all these lists, so many lists, these accomplishments needing to be done. So knowing this 15th chapter, knowing this teaching, there is nothing at all that is needing to be done. Nothing to be done. Because what I wanted to accomplish, I have already accomplished. So this is just the translation. We will take a 15-minute break and then come back to look at this verse in greater detail. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate பூர்ணஸ்ய பூர்ணமாதாய பூர்ணமேவாவசிஷ்யதே. ஓம் சாந்தி சாந்தி சாந்தி. ஹரி ஓம் ஸ்ரீ குருப்யோ நமஹ. ஹரி ஓம்.